Hi there. Today I'm here with Jason Torres. Jason is the community manager at Torque, which is a community-driven staff company. So we will learn what that means. Very excited to talk to you, Jason. How you do?
Oh, I am doing so good. I am honored to have been invited to come and hang out with you and to chat. And we got to meet IRL at that conference, RIP that conference. Hopefully it comes back in a bigger and better at some point. I know you had Clark on here recently. But yeah, I'm glad we get to catch up. I'm doing great.
Yeah, thank you. So you have a very interesting story about your personal journey into tech,
Do I?
right? I think
I mean, I
supposed
think
to.
that's a
So,
matter of perspective, but sure.
will you want to share it?
Yeah, so I have not been in tech that long. I'm actually, I don't know when the actual date was. I'd have to go back and look at like my social media posts when I announced it, but I want to say it was like the end of September when I started. So I'm going on my first year at Torque as a community manager, and that was my first role in tech. So I just started, and prior to that, I was self-taught, I think. And we were talking about this before we started. I'd have to again look back and see, but I want to say it was like 2022. Actually, you know what? We'll just do it in real time. You can cut this little part out if it takes a while, but I know exactly when it was because it's when I created my Twitter profile. 2023. I joined Twitter April of 2023. And that was probably a couple months in. Yeah, so it was December 2022 when I had started 100 Devs. I'm a self-taught developer. I went through some stuff in Free Code Camp, and then I came across 100 Devs, and I went through a bunch of that program. One thing that Leon talks about pretty extensively is networking. Like even within the first couple classes, it's get yourself set up on LinkedIn, get yourself set up on Twitter, any of the other socials, and just start connecting with people. Start in the 100 dev circle and then start reaching into those people's Venn diagram circles and networks and
That was
start
amazing. I
introducing
mean,
yourself.
I had some like hundreds of coffee chats with 100 Devs people
Oh,
back in 2022 and 2023.
yeah, the community is huge.
Is it still running? Like
Oh,
Leap
yeah,
Awards? Oh,
yep.
very cool.
I think that they're about to start like the official third cohort. I was part of the catch-up crew, so I came in between active like live cohorts. But I was self-taught. I was getting up at like 4 in the morning on days that my wife had to work. Because I was getting up to work at 4 in the morning during the week. And then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I would get up early and spend like 2 to 3 hours each morning, like going through classes and building and coding. I did that for several months. And in the meantime, while I was doing that, I was also networking. So I would reach out to people and ask them what they do and have conversations with them just to get a better understanding and a lay of the land as to how the tech industry kind of worked, not as far as the code's concerned, but as far as like the people are concerned, which kind of worked with my transferable skills before I was starting to be self-taught. I worked in the film industry for 15 years and started as a production assistant, worked my way up. And I've done some associate producing, some line production, directed a couple things, but I also predominantly was just a production manager, a UPM. But in that, I learned a lot about like interacting with people and communicating and like kind of understanding what makes things tick and how to work with different types of people. So it was important to me to kind of understand that and approach going into the tech industry differently. And I think that that boded well for how Leon sort of instructs people to do it with like building the community around you and the network first, and then let the skills kind of develop from there. So that's where I ended up. And it was interesting because for a while you start learning how to code and you're like, I want to be an engineer. I want to code all day, every day. And after a little while, I realized that you know, if I really wanted to utilize like my strengths and my transferable skills, it wasn't going to be coding every day. And that's why I kind of started looking more at like developer advocate positions, community manager positions, because it kind of gave me the opportunity to blend both of those things where I'm spending more time with people, but still in tech. And that's kind of where I ended up.
So that sounds like a lot of dedication from your side going in, like that transition phase of your career. Like getting up at 4 in the morning, spending 2 or 3 weeks or two or three hours per day on learning JavaScript, React, and all the fun stuff. So what made the tech industry as a field so appealing to you?
So it kind of it, there was a couple of reasons. So the original reason I started even looking into it and started checking out Free Code Camp was I have a neighbor that I don't even necessarily n remember like what their company does specifically, but they were looking for application developers that focused on building with Python. And that was actually what I started with, was starting to kind of like research that. He's like, hey, you know, we're looking for this. I can get you an interview. He's like, do you know anything? I was like, I mean, I don't know a lot. Or you know, I remember like the MySpace days coding like that, but it's like I certainly could learn. So that was really like the tip of the iceberg there, where I like started to check out Python and I checked out Free Code Camp, started going through some of the courses there. That obviously didn't work out, but that's really what like started the whole ball rolling for me, where I started to look into things. And honestly, it was that first Hello World moment where you hit the button and your thing renders and it
And the
works.
machine does what you told it.
It very much gave me the same feeling as like seeing a finished piece that I worked on as far as the film industry. Taking all of these little things and then creating something. It's that like creation and building that I was really always intrigued in the film industry, but now I'm doing it in a different format or a different medium. And that's where like I see a lot of parallels between the two things. So it's kind of like it's satiating my need to be creative, but in a different way. So that's where that all started. And yeah, it probably could have been something else. Maybe there's another industry out there that, you know, kind
That's
of
still to be
does the
figured
same
out.
thing. That scratches the itch for me. But, you know, for me, like that creative process and like seeing how all of the things behind the curtain create this end product is really fascinating to me. So that's where I kind of landed as far as the tech industry.
I mean, I'm in the tech industry like for a long time, and this never stopped to be fascinating. So maybe that's your last industry because it's so much going on there. I'm not sure, but
No,
I like
definitely. And
the
I mean,
approach of like experimenting and just trying out what works and what doesn't.
And I mean, there's so many emerging technologies and new things that come out, but the landscape of tech is always changing, but the people involved are always changing too. You know, the variable is us in the industry. And I think that that's cool for me too, because you're always interacting with people, you're always having to communicate or work with. So that can always be a variable that keeps things kind of from getting monotonous. And that piece of it as well kind of interests me, like the people element. And again, that's why I leaned more into, you know, less coding and more like people management or community managing, if you will. And I don't even like the term managing, because then again, it feels like you're in some sort of a leadership role where you're setting rules and parameters. It's more, you know, a community guide.
Makes sense. So and then like we are in 2023. Like you completed like 100 devs and probably some other boot camps, maybe a ton of YouTube videos, and maybe another
Tons.
ton of books and whatnot. So, and now what? How did you find like your way into like a paid
Yeah.
position?
So interestingly enough, I never completed 100 devs. There's like 60 some odd classes. I think I got to almost 40. And that's where, a lot of people don't need to finish. And I think this kind of speaks to using your like communicating confidently that even with the knowledge base that you have now, you could learn while you're working, but also the network you have around you. Like I had given people enough confidence in my abilities at that time that I didn't necessarily need to finish the curriculum. They knew that I could do it. So in my time, like building my socials and just like building in public and doing these things, when what I was doing to sort of cover bills, because it was right before COVID. I finished my last feature film. Like I walked off the set, we wrapped, and then everything in New York shut down because of the pandemic the following day. So it was like kind of poetic. Like this chapter is closing, like clearly. And we were good financially for a while, but I had to find another job. So I picked up a job at a factory as a process engineering technician, and I hated it. Knew that that was not going to be for me.
Why did you
But I
hate it?
was it just I didn't like what I was doing, and I was also working with somebody that really was not a team player. It's like, here's your like perfect example of how not to be a leader or manage people. And I've had a couple people like that over the years of my life, and it's like you can have a good example of how to be bad at something and good examples of how to be good at something. So those benefit you both in the sense that like I've seen how I would never do things, and then I've seen things how I want to emulate. So, it was that. And so I was doing that. And in that time, I'm leaving work every day around like 3 o'clock. And one of the guys that I kind of connected with through 100 Devs was also in his vehicle at the same time. So we started doing Twitter spaces together. Just like we'd go on, do a voice chat, and then other people from 100 Devs would come in and we'd just like talk about our day. And it really started to evolve into this like conversation where we would start to come up with topics and we would start to do more networking in there. And we bring in guests and talk to them about how they got into tech. Just we wanted to have a space for people that were in that same kind of area in life that we were. And that's why I called it the Tech Commute, which is the name of my podcast, because we were commuting at the time. Like it was very tongue in cheek. Like
Got
it
it.
literally was just us driving. So that's where that started. And through that, and just networking on Twitter and LinkedIn, I linked up with Taylor Dessen, who is my current boss at Torque, and he just really liked what I was doing. He liked like the way I was connecting with people. Like I was doing the right things to get in front of the right people. And I'm go go go. I'm applying for jobs at this point. I had gotten to a final round for a PHP developer role at a company through another friend that I knew. He connected me, got me through. And I found out I didn't get it. And oh, I was devastated. But it was at also at that moment that I like had realized I didn't want to be an engineer every day, because I see again like how people are benefiting from our talks in the tech commute and like hearing things and inspiring them. And Taylor's seeing how I'm connecting with people. So I, expressed to him, I'm like, hey, like I feel like I could do something like this. So he was always kind of on the lookout for me, looking for roles if they ever came across. But then when he started to get to the end of his tenure at his previous role at Gunn, he had the opportunity to start building a team, which one of the first people that he thought of was me for like doing community stuff, doing streams, talking to people, like being out there and active, like doing everything that I was already doing, just not being paid for it. So again, like there goes that like proof, like putting yourself out there and building in public and showing people what you're capable of. People do notice, whether it's like immediately known to you or not. So the time came and he said, hey, this is going to be happening. I'm going to be leaving my role. I'm going to be going somewhere else. I have a place for you. I was like, let's go. Let's do it. So, and that was it. So 2024, well, let's see. I'm trying to think the math here. No, it was the end of 2023. I'm doing the years in my head here. I was still working at the factory and I was still like doing my classes and trying to do this. And I actually started at Torque with him while I was still there and just like plugging away. And I was doing some freelance stuff as well. So I'm like working both jobs kind of at the same time. I did have the liberty of some freedom as far as like my time at the other job, but they kind of knew I was leaving and they were kind of trying to push me out. So it was like a really weird dynamic, but I knew in my head, like it was going to be done. And then, you know, I got the call from him. He's like, let's do it. And that was that. So.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, like Torque is like in probably one sentence, it's a staffing company. It connects like developers with companies. And it has a very unique approach to it. Like I got a call from a staffing agency just the other day and they were like, okay, we have a 6 month project. Would you be available on 1st of September? And I was like, well, probably not. And like Talk is doing that on everything more long-term play, I would say. Mm. But before we get into that, I really love the way you put it, like doing the right work to get in front of the right people. So for you, that meant like building in public, making your learning process publicly visible, going to conferences, meetups, connecting with the right people. So like to put it more general, I mean, you have also like contact with applicants to roles and stuff. Like, what does it mean nowadays to do the right things to get in front of the right people?
That's a really good question. I mean, I always strongly suggest that people put out what they're doing in public, whether it's just showing the projects you're working on, showing where you are in your learning. People take notice of that. And when people are looking at you for a potential role, that timeline of what you're learning or what you're building, like they can see like the evidence that says like, okay, this person built out their entire back end here. They know how to do that. Here's the work to show it. Here's the repository. I can go look at that. So again, it's like proof of work, proof of knowledge. Which I think can streamline the process as far as getting somebody to trust that you are capable to do a potential role. Just again, like supporting people in that way too. It's like if you're building in public, other people will connect with you. Maybe there's somebody out there, and I'll just say Laravel because it's at top of mind. It's like I build a Laravel project and people in the Laravel community see that. Well, people in the Laravel community might know of a role somewhere else that then are like, hey, I know somebody that just put something together that's doing almost that. So I should put these people in touch. You know, again, it's like those community circles, those Venn diagrams where they intersect. Like that's what you're trying to ultimately achieve is like to get yours to touch enough of them that it brings opportunities to you. But more importantly, you're providing opportunities or things for other people. I think that's really the big thing for me is like I wasn't necessarily, I can't say completely that I wasn't putting my stuff out there for people to see me, but I wanted people to also see like the I'm struggling as well. Like I'm going through this the trials and tribulations of trying to get into it. It's hard for me. So you can do it too. Like, I wanted it to be inspiration and motivation for other people and learn from, like, you know, the tech commute where I'm building and failing. It's like, so if you see something that I failed at, maybe it can prevent you from doing it and, you know, repeating my mistakes. So in a way, like, helping others get through the struggle. And I think that's just what community is like, that support system. So I would always suggest people are, like, posting on LinkedIn, posting on Twitter or Blue Sky, like, make little blogs about your journey, just tell the story, because there's somebody out there that will relate to it. And then hopefully, again, somebody will see it and be like, okay, this person knows what they're talking about. Like, this is somebody I want to work with us or with me. So that's what I would do.
So that comes down to, like, consistency, authenticity, and, like, mutual support.
Yeah,
definitely. Is that what the core to it?
I would say so. I mean, being authentic, and this was something that I've thought about a lot, because I came from an industry where literally people are just paid to not be themselves, right? You know, acting is being someone else. It's a very, like, dark industry. I think that a lot of people don't realize that, and it's very two-faced. Like, that's one thing when I left the industry, and it's like, you have all these connections and all these people that you consider friends. Like, I have literally, the second I left, I never heard from any of those people again.
Oh, wow. Is, like, that true?
Yeah. Super weird to think about, but it was really important to me to, like, come into this industry and just, like, be as genuine and authentic and just, like, approach it differently. Mm-hmm. So I think the authenticity thing, like, you can never speak highly enough about. It's just really, really important to me.
And I guess that's also what's important, like, to the community at Talk, right? Like, could you elaborate on that one a bit? Like,
because for sure.
we said it was a staffing company, but I don't think that does justice to what Talk actually is.
No. So a little background on Torque. And I mean, a lot of people at this point know what it is, and you hit the nail on the head. At the end of the day, we do staff. Our clients look for developers all over the world, and we provide them those those developers, or technologists too. We're starting to get more into, like, production managers or product managers, PMs, QAs, just kind of all over the board. But we try to do it in a different way, where, you know, I think that the staffing industry in general has just got a really bad stigma to it. We're approaching it from the mindset, like, I know that statistically, out of the several million developers that we have on our platform, 10% of them will end up getting roles through us. Okay. And what about the other 90%? Like, who cares about them then?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know that with that statistic in place, that other 90%, like, should have the same amount of priority to us. And that's why we try to give everybody all these other resources. Like, we do constantly are doing networking events and in-person events. We do a bunch of, like, learning, like, webinars and workshops, because we want to reduce that 90%, or, like, their inability to be qualified for one of our roles, and upskill them. Mm-hmm. And maybe at the end of the day, they don't get a job on our platform, and that's okay too, but maybe they meet somebody in our Discord that is looking. We have an entire Discord channel of only jobs, like job listings from people that we know. Sorry, I just noticed that I'm watching, I have Dumb and Dumber on in the background here.
Thinking it was intentional.
Yeah, no, well, I noticed it is intentional. Yeah, it is intentional, but I forgot that one scene is a little inappropriate. so we have just job listings in there, and it's, like, vetted roles from people that we know at companies. And we always are posting those in our Discord for people to apply to or connect with. Because again, like showing that we're here to support not just the people that we are able to place, but just everybody in the tech community is mm-hmm. what we're trying to do. Because again, like nobody likes staffing agencies, but they certainly like a community of people that'll support them. So at the end of the day, like that's what our focus is always going to be from the developer side, not the client side. You know, we have a team that focuses on the client side. That's sales. That's whatever. That's our matching team.
You have to.
Yeah. Yeah. That's their job. Like our job is to support the people in the actual community and to provide them with resources outside of just a job. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. That's very cool. So you're exposed to clients, you're exposed mm-hmm. to applicants, you're exposed to like the tech industry as a whole from both sides of the table, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you yourself started like right after a big or medium big shift in the tech industry, right after like the big layoffs of 2023. Mm-hmm. Like the landscape of tech, did it change in a way that you would have expected from the beginning of your journey?
It's interesting because I didn't have anything to base my like opinion on because I hadn't been in it, but seeing it, you know, you spoke about the layoffs and now, you know, obviously we're in the big AI boom. That wasn't really something when I started learning that people were hyper-focused on. It was just kind of picking up and you'd see some talk about it, but now it's become so prevalent. I think that a lot of people are fear-mongering AI, and I hear like a lot of AI is going to take your job. That is 1,000% false. I think the way that we need to look at it is AI isn't going to take your job, but the developer that knows how to use the tool the best will. And I think a lot of people are still on that, I don't want to use it. I think that they're doing themselves a huge disservice by not at least understanding it enough to take advantage of it in their current roles. And again, that's twofold, though, because then there's the people that completely abuse it and vibe code and Replit deletes an entire database in production. We've all heard that story at this point, but that's, again, taking it too far. And that's where like the human element of all of this still needs to be a part of it. And that's where, again, AI can't take our jobs. Because it can't make those types of decisions. It can't be the fail safe. It can't check the work like a human does. And that's why I think it's important. Even us, like we're starting to see a lot of talk about AI tools in recruiting and hiring and how it's dealt with. But in general, a lot of companies will get AI applicants. Like just flooded. And we use, and this is something that kind of sets Torque apart from a lot of companies, is we still have a human matching team, like people that when applicants apply to a role, they get vetted. And then we have a team that will talk to the person, go through multiple interviews, like over phone or video, go through assessments and everything. So we're checking and doing our due diligence to make sure, well, one, you're not talking to a robot on our end, but we're making sure that our clients aren't potentially getting a robot on their end either, which is interesting because, again, this is something that a lot of people don't take into consideration when they're applying to roles. If you say you are like proficient in English, for example, this is a big one because we have a lot of people in Latin America. We have a huge like demographic down there that'll apply for roles. I'd say they're proficient in English and the role specifically needs somebody that is very comfortable English speaking. We have conversations. We talk like you and I right now. So I'll know, not me specifically, but somebody on the matching team will know very quickly whether the skills that you state you have match the skill you actually have. And that's why being mindful of what you put out there, make sure that you can back it up. Make sure that you can talk to those points. That's like resumes. That's, you know, if you vibe code something, which again, using the AI tools are great, but know what you did, know the work, because if you're putting these things out there and somebody asks you about it or questions, especially in an interview, you have to be able to speak to the work. And again, that's why we have this matching team to be able to kind of take care of that and expedite that before this person gets to the client. So we know that they're getting the best fit, but I think it's also good for the actual developer because we know that they've gone through a process and they're comfortable with the company too. You know, a lot of the setup is kind of facilitated by the client. They're looking for specific things, so the assessments are built around what their needs are. So it's really a good match by the time they get to them.
Got it. I mean, you talked about like skill lists. I mean, English is one thing, but there are also like technical skills. I'm not sure if I'm right on that, but what my perception is that this sport of keyword stuffing, that changed a bit. So probably a couple of years ago, you had to have Kubernetes, the latest and greatest React framework, and I don't know what else on your resume. And like my perception is nobody talks about those very specific thing anymore. Mm-hmm. It's more like what general tools or what general systems architecture are you familiar with? Is that something that you would see as well?
Yeah, I think that, and we talk about this a lot because we do a lot of resume reviews now. This is something that the community's really been interested in because, you know, everybody has a resume, especially people that are looking for jobs right now, and they want to understand the best way to put it together, compose it, to get in front of people and get to that next step. The keyword thing, or like bolding things for people, like highlighting things, you don't need to do that anymore. Most recruiters or somebody that's looking through a stack of resumes is just going to do like a keyword search. You don't need to highlight those things. But again, if I'm specifically looking at maybe a DevOps role that's looking for Azure experience or some sort of Docker experience, whatever, put those. Like, that role doesn't care if you know React. Like, that there's certain levels or certain like skills that you should always focus on for certain roles. And I think that that also comes down to job descriptions. People need to make sure that they're reading the job description and tailoring the resume and their skills on the resume to that specific role, not just like putting every single thing that you know. Like, we've seen resumes where it just says leadership. Like, that's a skill, leadership. What does that mean? Yeah. Like, that's such a jet, you know, and stuff like that, like whether you mean to or not, like can have a negative impact on how somebody looks at your resume or what you're putting out there. And again, that's why it's like so important to ensure that everything you're putting that is public facing is checked. I mean, obviously there's a human element to some things and you want to have your personality in there. But when it comes to stuff like that, you definitely have to make sure you're very mindful of what you're putting, and especially on the resume.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an interesting point because I guess it's very important, like, to tailor your CV to the particular role.
Yes.
But anyway, could you give a good example of what that means? Because like we all in high school back then, we learned that this is just a list of chronologically ordered like stations of your career. How would you change that in response to a particular job ad?
Sure. I love that question. We see this a lot, and I'll give you a perfect example. I was helping. So we did resume reviews a couple weeks ago with Kelsey Hightower, who's former Google, keynote speaker, just everybody knows who Kelsey is. So he came in and afterwards he sent me an email and he connected me with a very close friend of his. He's like, can you help him with his resume and, you know, try to get him a job? Which was awesome because it's like Kelsey Hightower just asked me to do that. But anyway, I looked at this guy's resume.
That's a skill on its own, right?
Right. I looked at the guy's resume and it was like over 4 pages long. Like he has 20 years of experience. So, I mean, that's understandable, the length sometimes. But after talking to him, he told me what role specifically he's looking for. Now, if we're tailoring resumes to a specific role, that literally negates half of the like relevance of a like what's on this resume. Like I don't need to know certain things. And I think that's where sometimes people aren't curating the resume. They're just putting all of it. Like it is a highlight career reel. But that's not what people want. Like if I'm about to look at 500 resumes, I want to just see what is relevant for you for the role that I'm potentially hiring you for. Mm-hmm. And again, sometimes that means leaving off some specific achievements or certifications that aren't specifically relevant. If you worked, and again, if it's you have specific cloud certifications or Google, and that's the type of role you're looking at where it says that you will be doing those things, make sure that's highlighted. But at that point, I don't think that you expressing that you have a CSS certification from LinkedIn or something like that, you know, like those right. Those are the types of things that you see where you can almost immediately tell that somebody is just, again, listing everything, and that one resume is going to any possible job that they're applying to. And I think that they're doing themselves a disservice because when someone's looking for specific things, you want to highlight specific things and just put a specific thing, not make it a huge paragraph or 7 different bullet points of job experience that don't really relate, but they might have to another job. I think some people just don't like to take the time. And I think if this is important to you and you want the job enough, you should spend the extra 5 minutes to like have, sometimes you're going to have like 6 different versions of your resume. Okay. Like how bad do you want the job?
Like, so that's also like part of it. It's probably mm-hmm. also proof of work, like showing yeah. your potential employer mm-hmm. That you care for yeah. those details and that you yeah. care for tailoring your resume, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's an extra 5 minutes now, but if it gets you the second or third interview, like you just got to get in the door. It's those types of things that people are overlooking and then not understanding why they're not getting interviews. You know, this was the one conversation that I had with the guy that I was helping that Kelsey had recommended to me too. After speaking with him, there's no way that he's not going to get a job once they talk to him. But the way his resume was set up, like, I wasn't reading all that. And I told him that. I was like, there's way too much information here. Like it's not, and most of it isn't relevant. Like, tell me what kind of a role you want. Take half of this off because it's not tied to that. Or the half we take off, if you're going to apply to like a senior engineer level, whatever, like then let's take that part and put mm-hmm. it on a different resume. Like let's take what we're taking off and make a different resume out of it and then apply to those roles. Cause again, it's just too much. That's one thing. And I think the focus of AI is to make our jobs faster and easier. Well, if you think that everybody is just like worrying about time and time management, we want things to be faster and faster. Do you think that anybody's going to read a 6-page resume ever? You know, that first top 30% of the first page is going to be the most impactful. So it's again, like, I don't want to have to try to find things or figure it out. You want to highlight and focus, like hyper-focus specifically to the role you're applying to. it saves their time. And honestly, I think, again, it saves your time in the long run. So
what is if you don't have any relevant experience? And the way I mean that is, let's say you're working on a project, maybe mm-hmm. you're doing some Python work and you want to change. You want to do some JavaScript or you want to do some DevOps, but you don't have like corporate credentials for that. So then leaving out would probably not be an option. So, but I think there is a lot of cases where like people want to change their job driven by the desire to work with a different technology. So what's your advice for those people?
I think you build. I think sometimes it's not going to just be a flip of the switch. You're going to apply. I think you have to at least show some proof of concept of the idea. Like, you have enough experience with Python and you want to move to JavaScript. Okay, you're proficient enough in Python, so I know you're able to learn. Just build at least one or two things just to get at least a little comfortable, so you have a few talking points. And I think, you know, I had a really good example of this yesterday on my podcast. I had a guest. He was some sort of manager, project manager in an outsourcing call center. Mm-hmm. And he got his first role in tech. After that, he had his interviews and they had asked him something specifically about, I don't remember the exact question, but it had to do with Angular. His first role was Angular and he hadn't really used Angular. Like, he went through 100 devs and they're like Mern stack. Like, there wasn't really Angular introduced in any of the stuff that we were building. But because of his experience in project management and talking to people and understanding how to communicate with different levels of leadership and people and learning styles, he was able to, and he admits, and he was told that his answer was wildly wrong, but the way he presented how he would go about it gave them enough confidence that he could do the job. So understanding that you're a very proficient Python developer and being able to articulate how you would do something in another language could potentially be enough, but I still think you have to have at least a couple just basic projects for them to see. So again, I don't think a Python dev's going to just immediately start applying for roles without having a little bit of a footprint there first to talk about.
So it's basically coming back to putting your GitHub projects on your resume, right?
Yeah. I think projects are important. I know some people will think that that isn't important, but I think somebody that has like 5 to 10 years of experience in something wouldn't need them. But if you're very entry level or you're in your first role and you are trying to pivot, I think projects can be very important. And I think, again, if you're putting projects up, you need to make sure that you have a link so somebody can go to the repository or to the URL if you've deployed it, which I think is another thing too, is, you know, if it's deployed, make sure it's working, make sure it's ready and up and everything's functioning, and then make sure you know what you did. You know, make sure that you refresh yourself on your repos, check the folder structures, check like specific things as far as like the codes and your package JSON files, so you know what dependencies you have, because that'll be another thing too. It's like those little things they will try to trip you up on. If you say you are confident and comfortable working with X, make sure you know X, because they will try to slip you up on that. If you're not comfortable with it, don't put it.
And I mean, there are like best practices and coding guidelines for all languages. I couldn't think of any that hasn't. So just use them. Freely available.
Oh, yeah.
So that's very cool. And there are a lot of tools, Linters and I don't know what, which helps you actually setting up your project exactly in a way that it is supposed to be.
Yeah. All of those things are important. I think, again, like anything you're putting out there, make sure you can back up. You know, if it's on the resume and they question you about that in the interview and again, you don't sound like you know what you're talking about, you shot yourself in the foot. So just, again, you have to remember what you're putting out there. People can question you about. So make sure that you do know and you have the confidence in your skills.
Yeah. So you mentioned it that those projects are a very good tool for entry-level positions or junior developers. So I think they're pretty important for senior developers as well, but probably in a different way. The question is, what is the current state of jobs? What roles are you primarily like staffing? Is it more junior devs? Is it more senior devs, mid-level devs?
It changes pretty frequently. We get notifications anytime like a deal closes or somebody gets placed, and they're constantly, I'm going to pull up the Slack channel right now. Now I'll tell you exactly what we're doing here, what the last few were. So we put a data engineer into a role. What's this one? This one doesn't have a title. We had a MongoDB role, a senior backend engineer, a DevOps role, an engineer two front end. We had a senior infrastructure network engineer, a data architect, QA. And this is all in August. Full stack engineer one, full stack engineer two, platform engineers, a .NET AI engineer. Don't hear .NET very often. Backend.
With AI, but interesting combination. Yeah,
I know. A Python developer, an engineer too. This is still a data analyst. These are just ones with titles right in the message that I can read without opening anything. There's about seven or eight other ones that if I clicked on, I could tell you what they are. But another platform engineer, a senior Angular engineer, UI UX. So we're kind of all over the place. Like, it really just depends on what the client's needs are. I know that we have had a few junior entry levels come in. They go fast because we have a ton of people on the platform that are probably even overqualified. But that's why, again, it's awesome that we have an AI tool that'll kind of refine a list when it queries like what's available in our platform as far as potential candidates. But then again, we have the human matching team that then goes through and vets all of those. So we know that they are some of the best suited for the roles. But that's also why I like our Discord and the community, because we are constantly adding new roles to the job channel that aren't on our platform. Like, they're not our clients. Like, we just, again, we want to help people get opportunities. Like, that's it.
Got it. I mean, people probably got confused about the number that you mentioned, 90% of people on your platform don't get a job. I mean, probably they don't get a job through Talk. They might get a job through another place. But in general, how hard is it to get a job in tech these days?
It's hard.
Probably not 90 to 10.
No. I mean, that's a statistic based on like what I've seen through our numbers. Like, we have 2 million people on our platform. You saw in August, these are the roles I've listed. There's I don't know, we'll probably place anywhere from like 30 to 50 this month. It's probably way less than 10% from our platform, but it doesn't mean that in our community, people aren't able to get jobs. You know, it's just, that's kind of the numbers game. There's one role for every 2,000 people that apply online. I
mean, that's probably the general setup of a staffing company.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, in the general market, I hear a lot of people complaining how hard it is to get a job. I see other people, they are just like picking up the phone and they have a job in an instant. So what's your perception? How hot is it?
I was just speaking with somebody about this in a space this past weekend, and honestly, and some people are going to get a little butt hurt when they hear this. There are thousands of people getting jobs every day. The job market isn't necessarily as hard as people think it is. You're either not going about it the right way, or you're not qualified for the roles you're applying to. Like, that's sometimes a little bit of a hard pill to swallow for people because they just think that, oh, I should have this job. Why didn't I get this job? Well, I can tell you probably didn't put your information out there in like an attractive way, and somebody else did. Or, fun fact, they probably knew somebody at the company who got them in, and that's always the best way. So you're not leveraging your network in the way that you need to. And again, like, people don't like hearing that they're the problem. Like, an easy
Of
scapegoat
course,
is,
you are
oh, it's
holding
the
it
job.
wrong.
It's the job market's fault. It's not my fault that I can't write my resume the right way, or that people don't even look at it because it's 11 pages of fluff. Or I'm not skilled enough as a back-end engineer to get a back-end engineer role. I'm not showing enough proof of work or skill set. So how do we fix that? Well, we go back to what we were talking about. We go back to networking better, like meeting more people, putting yourself out there, connecting with the right people. I always suggest if you're looking for a role at a company, don't apply. Like, go into the people on LinkedIn that work there, reach out to a few of them that are in similar roles and ask them questions. Like, introduce yourself. Hey, I'm so and so. I'm looking at this role at your company. I just wanted to ask you a few questions about it. I've literally never heard anybody hear or say that they were told no. And usually that ends up being something. A lot of people will just be like, yeah, you want me to like speak to this person there. Like, that's who would be hiring for that role. Great. Awesome. Like, that's the best way to do it. Like, go that way. Then, before you do that, though, make sure that your LinkedIn is cleaned up. Make sure that your resume looks good. Because once you get in there, you want to make sure that all that information is where it needs to be. So when they see it, they're like, oh, okay, let's move this person to the top of the pile. Like, let's get them in for an interview. You know, again, like, the toughest pill to swallow is that you're the problem. It's not the job market. But you can fix these things. That's the other thing. You can't fix the job market, but you can fix how you're presenting yourself to it. So, and that's what we try to help people with.
Yeah, and I guess at this point we should mention that the community calls that Torque does and all of the resume polishing stuff that's offered for free basically. You just need to put yourself out there again, hop on the Discord, and I guess that's it basically, right?
Yeah, we have a big panel stream in about a half an hour. So when we're done with this, I'll go downstairs and refresh my coffee and some water, and then come back up. But we have Leon Noel, who runs 100 Devs. He's from Resilient Coders. We have Danny Thompson, who runs a very big cohort down in Dallas, and then Quincy Larson, who obviously runs Free Code Camp. Like, we're providing this as a free opportunity for people to just ask them questions and hear their insight on like what they should be doing and trends they're seeing. Like, you can just find it on Twitter. You can look on LinkedIn. Like, we just want to make sure that we're giving everybody all the opportunities that they can from us, and like providing value from being a part of our community. So.
Yeah, thank you so much. I mean, that was an inspiring story and like I think really actionable tips and insights to actually getting a job, right? Thank you
I
so much
hope
for
so.
that.
No, definitely. I mean, at the end of the day, like, my goal is to help every person that I come in contact with. I don't know what that means. Like, that's going to be different for everybody. But I always try to like pay it forward. You know, I made it into an industry that's hard, and I want to help others do that. So.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it. Thank you so much. So
Oh,
we
thanks,
will
man.
just put the links to your Tech Commute podcast and the links to Torque down in the show
Cool.
notes.
Do it.
Thank you.
I love it. Well, thank you.